Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
What is this, Brian Moore's podcast?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, and we are currently doing this podcast live from the Millennium Stadium with music coming from DJ Spoonie. This is now primarily a nightclub, this sporting venue. Check out all the flashing lights, guys. How about that?
Wow. Very nice. Oh, my eyes.
There's Warren Gatland over at the bar. He's drinking neat whiskey, looking a bit glum. Stuart Lancaster.
Is he on
it? Stuart Lancaster is popping open a bottle of champagne. I'll tell you what, though, lads, look over there. George North looks absolutely smashed.
Yeah.
His eyes are rolling.
He can hardly stand up.
He hasn't even had a drink. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast after the first round of Six Nations matches.
Oh my God, Haskell's t-shirt's tight.
Let's do this. Oh, I didn't do the hands in. Let's just do it anyway. Hands in, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Right, I'm Tim. That is JB.
Good day, Tim.
And that is Phil.
Hi, Tim.
48 hours almost since you watched your Welsh brethren get a schooling in the Millennium Stadium, Jay. What's your overriding feeling?
Oh, we're not going to talk about Wigan taking on Widnes in the opening of the Super League. That happened this weekend.
It did as well, yeah.
Thursday, yeah. Thursday, how was the game? Did you catch it?
I didn't. I missed that, unfortunately.
Oh, what a comeback from...
Sorry, you should be a politician. We know you kind of are interested in your politics, but you should be a politician with diverting tactics like that. I've already touched on the flashing lights and the razzmatazz at the Millennium Stadium. Now, JB is a Welshman, a traditionalist.
I'm a North Walian, thank you.
Yeah, but you're still a Welshman. You're definitely a traditionalist, okay. A rugby purist, a grumpy old fart at times. What did you make of the razzmatazz, DJ Spoonie and all at the Millennium Stadium before kickoff?
I loved it. I absolutely...
Did you really?
I love it so much. I love the big occasion. I love the Super Bowl. I love the halftime show. It looked awesome. It really did. I mean, I've often criticised Scotland because they like to do, like, battle reenactments before they get spanked by 50 points. But, you know, this was a competitive game, and it looked great. I mean, that's what rugby is, isn't it? It's predominantly a show.
Phil, what was your reaction?
I like some of the flamethrowers and some of the grandeur of that stuff, but I think the kind of lights out techno music and that kind of stuff, the strobe lights.
Phil, out of all three of us, you're the one that likes techno music the most.
At the right time, the right place.
In your mini.
My thought about this is, and we talked about it on the last podcast, I played that anthem from 2013 in the Millennium Stadium. There is no more hair-raising a moment, and just... Welsh anthems and the Welsh choir songs done in that stadium, Bread of Heaven, just focus on that the boys play.
I mean, yes, do both. It's very WWE.
But it was a bit, wasn't it? A bit too WWE.
And if you like WWE like I do, because it's...
And the farce in the changing rooms and the tunnel beforehand as well.
Good.
It's really interesting because I think it was about, before the game had even kicked off, me, Phil and JB, we all watched this match together, as you will hear very soon. I was secretly recording some audio.
No.
Were you?
Yes, I was.
Wow. Snake.
You will hear that very soon. But I think I said, as the England team walked out, they were walking with their chest puff right out. There was a bit of menace in their eyes. They looked like they meant business. And I turned to JB and I said, this doesn't feel like 2013. I'm feeling good about this game. And it hadn't even started. Just watching Chris Robshaw before the match filled me with so much confidence.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh,
not me.
Yeah, taking control of the situation in the tunnel. Like the farcical situation with Wales refusing to come out of the tunnel.
So the way it's meant to...
out of their changing room.
Yeah, the way it's meant to have gone is both teams come out of their changing room, then England go out, and then Wales go out 1 minute later. But England were being asked to go out and the Welsh reserves had come out of the changing room. It was another one of Warren Gatland's mind games, which he tried a few of through the week. It's starting with announcing his team on Monday morning.
We'll come to Warren Gatland later.
But no, I love the way Chris Robshaw dealt with that.
Me too.
I think he'd never looked more like a captain.
Yeah, I
thought he had shades of Martin Johnson on the wrong side of the Irish pitch, because that was epic.
That was great.
Yeah, I think so. I think it really did show that he's a leader. I know when he first started captaining England, he got criticised a little bit. He made a few bad decisions. And
going for the posts that time.
Yeah. Was it a game against South Africa in the Autumn International?
I think that rings a bell, yeah.
But yeah, he got criticised then. But now I think he's really, really grown into that captaincy position. And that was a good demonstration of it.
And the game hadn't even kicked off and Mike Brown got angry.
Well.
Never known Jay so silent.
Well, you know, bittersweet for me because obviously the Welsh lost and it was heartbreaking, particularly as we didn't score a single point in the second half, and I've got my own reasons why that may have happened. Kind of the game went as I would expect it to go if England were to win, and that is Wales work as hard as they possibly can for 60 minutes, and then if they've not won by 60 minutes, it's over, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, you are less outspoken and quieter than you normally are,
no,
Jay.
I've not started yet.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, let me just take us back in time. Let's hear some of JB's wisdom from last week's podcast.
Oh, I hope so. A classic example of where Lancaster's got it wrong is the back row. He sticks with Robshaw through thick and thin, and everyone goes, oh, well, he's the best for that role within that team and that system.
I don't agree with that. I think he's the best seven in England.
Yeah, I agree with that. There you go. First bit there, Jay.
Well,
you got to admit Robshaw had a special game.
No. I really don't. I thought Haskell had a special game. I thought he missed that one tackle early doors.
So letting Wales for a try, yeah.
But
yeah.
After that, he was magnificent. And I
thought they both were.
Robshaw was good.
I thought Robshaw, he made the most tackles in the game, mm-hmm. didn't miss a single one, and it just his work rate, the number of rucks, because Wales, we said this when we were watching it, Wales were really throwing two men over the ball every single time, and the number of times that a guy got isolated, but Robshaw was the first guy there and cleared out two Welshmen who were already in stronger positions. I thought he was spectacular in that regard.
He was England's best player for me.
You have?
Yeah.
Well,
I would say that as well. And I know he didn't get man of the match, and in a few of the rugby paper and stuff like that I've seen, he's not top scored. Generally, it's George Ford, Jonathan Joseph and Haskell who have top scored.
Mm. Well, let's just not take my audio from last week, but let's see what I've said consistently about Lancaster's team. And if Lancaster had his way, a lot of those players wouldn't have been playing. Jonathan Joseph wouldn't have been playing. Probably George Ford would have either... He might have been playing, but there's a chance that Farrell might have got the nod.
Yeah.
Atwood, I thought, was spectacular. Yeah, I mean, he can hold...
Cruz looked an international player, didn't he?
Yeah.
Decent player. And, of course, Haskell, who I've already mentioned, who just got stronger as the game went on. But this isn't new. I've been saying that Haskell has looked good all season.
That's one thing you have to say, particularly in the second half. England didn't just beat, they out-muscled, bullied the Welsh pack, which you haven't been able to say that about any team for a long time.
You say that, but you're wrong, because... They weren't bullying the Welsh pack for the first half. And then it's only the second half. And like I say, if Wales haven't won by 60 minutes, and you could see England getting stronger and stronger and stronger as Wales started to tail off. Here's something weird for you. I wasn't even aware that Wales had backs. I mean, the backs were completely... Except for George Ford. And by the way, you probably all agree with me here. The WRU needs to be fined or sanctioned, or the coaching staff needs to be fined. That was absolutely horrific. What they did with George Ford.
George North.
Sorry, George Ford. North. yeah. The guy could hardly stand.
Yeah.
The first time he got knocked out.
In the first half,
when he
caught
the boot to the face, he got taken off for 8 minutes. They went through full concussion protocol, determined he wasn't concussed.
That's absolutely fine.
That's fine. That is, everything's been followed.
You've got to trust the doctors on that one.
Yeah. The second time... When he collided with a bowling ball in a blonde wig.
And you can totally... And he bounced back up. And you can totally understand if they didn't see it straight away. But everyone in the ground, everyone on television, everyone at home saw the replay. And as soon as you saw that replay, a doctor or a coach or anyone should have said, off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
And he takes the ball into contact a couple of minutes later, and it's just... He loses it just going into contact. I'm sure he won't remember much of the second half of that game. You've got to say, if anyone on the Wales bench,
I thought you were
going
to say,
staff,
you've got to say, lucky bugger, not being able to remember any of the second half. But anyway,
you've got to say, if anyone has seen that, they've got to take him off. So obviously no one's seen it. But
I don't believe,
I don't believe no one's seen it.
They see everything.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, they've got how many laptop screens do they have in front of them? If we see a replay at home, they see the replay. Someone sees the replay in the stadium.
Put it this way, right? When I went to watch Sale in Stockport ages ago, I was sitting in the press area and I was looking down. And in front of me was Steve Diamond. Now, Sale have not got the facilities that Wales have. They've got three laptops in front of them and they can see everything. As soon as something happens, actually, strange enough, Jonathan Joseph scored for London Irish. But as soon as he scored, all three laptops were looking at it from different angles. There is no way the Welsh did not see that.
If even one person has seen that and they've not done anything, that is appalling.
Someone should be fined.
Yeah.
100%.
And this is in no way getting JB stepping away from his let the boys play mantra.
No. I mean, if you see someone...
No, this is just common sense.
You've got to get him off.
It's so dangerous. We don't know what's happened since then. We don't know what kind of concussion protocol is going on.
But we know that World Rugby have come out and said they want the WRU to answer what happened.
100%.
Yeah.
They have to.
And none of us expect George North to be playing this coming weekend, I assume.
Or Samson Lee, apparently, because he was being confirmed that he was concussed during the game as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Welsh backs were pretty anonymous. And I think Gatland himself. Phil spotted this as well. You probably did also. The Welsh kicking game was atrocious. Now, it's not that Wales can't kick. They've got some good kickers. Dan Biggar's an excellent kicker. I thought he looked very, very good. But he was doing what he was told to do. And for whatever reason it was, the game plan was slice kicks towards the halfway.
Kick as high as possible.
Only
but
about 20 metres forward.
Yeah, land it. And which was generally around the halfway, wasn't it?
I just didn't understand
it. I think they were thinking they had big backs and they'd get a lot of... They'd recover the ball a lot.
So there's two things here. There's that the average height of their backs was bigger. They want to get them rushing on and it's almost making it like a 50-50 and they hope they win more of the 50-50 balls because they've got bigger backs.
But, you know, you've got Jamie Roberts coming off one of the games of his career against the same guy. Why didn't he just run Jamie Roberts down his channel?
They did it once where the ball came off the top of the line out. Reece Webb took a few steps and fired it to Jamie Roberts and he made like 10 or 15 metres just once in the second half. They should have been doing that all game because it allows quick front foot ball for their quicker backs.
I am absolutely amazed. I'm a huge Gatland fan, but he's gone all week with all this with all this trickery and
mind games.
And his best idea is to kick it high.
I know. Now, the other thing, and this is something that Gatland said months ago during the Autumn Internationals when he got asked about the England game and what tactics he'd be using. And he made a comment, I can't remember the exact words he used, but it was a comment about not wanting to give away anything for the World Cup. So his comments was like, yeah, I understand England, I understand how my squad can beat England, but I'm not sure what tactics I'll use against them because I don't want to reveal anything ahead of the World Cup.
You don't know how much I hope that's true.
Well, the real test will be the World Cup, but it's an interesting one to kind of... It's almost give up on the Six Nations with a chance of playing a slightly different tactic and winning a game in the World Cup.
All right, Tim, because Tim is one of these guys who does... you like to think you do everything the right way, okay?
Yeah,
and I think you probably do, in fairness. So I'm going to ask you this question.
Thank you, Jay. It was sort of said with a bit of disdain, but I'm going to take it as a compliment.
The words were nice, but the way you said it was...
So, with your moral compass, Tim, you're the coach of Wales, and your job is to win every game that you play.
Yeah.
What tactics do you use against England, bearing in mind you've got a bigger game in 6 months, 9 months' time? Do you go out and effectively limit your playbook or do you just put it all out there?
No, I'd want to put doubt in England's mind when we had to go up the M4 to Twickenham by knowing that we'd bullied them. And the way that Wales could have bullied them was by, as Phil just said, using Jamie Roberts as a one-man, and Jonathan Davies for that matter, as two wrecking balls. And then getting them over the gain line. And it's easier to get quick ball when you're over the gain line. Yeah. Then you release players like George North.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's not...
It's not rocket science, is it?
It's not a mystery.
No.
Yeah.
No. What we said last week was, we said Wales have one of the most simple game plans in world rugby.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's ineffective, because it's still, even though you know what's going to happen, it's hard to stop.
Simple isn't easy.
Yeah.
Toulon. Toulon are the most predictable team in the world, but can anyone stop them?
Sean Edwards had a marvellous saying when he moved over to Wales and he was still coach of Wasps and people were accusing him of giving away the secrets of English rugby because Wasps at the time were a real force.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's no secret. Simon Shaw carries really hard.
You know, I know.
It isn't a secret.
Yeah. Right, I'm just going to grab something. I'm going to hit pause. Right, boys, I've got a bit of a treat. As I mentioned, we were watching the game at JB's house and there was a cast of a thousands in your front room.
There was.
Never seen so many people in your front room. Men, women, dogs.
A couple of dogs, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was secretly recording and you still didn't know that I'd done this until we did the podcast. No. But one bit I happened to have been recording was that moment when James Haskell, and I mentioned how England left some scores out on the field. James Haskell left one score out on the field when he decided just to run into the post. this was that moment in JB's living room.
Yes, Bontos! 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 No!
Idiot, Bontos, you idiot!
Come on! Fire.
It's on!
Oh! Bontos!
There's a yellow
card.
Haskell!
Did he just run into
the killer? Haskell! Yeah. He runs so great!
That's great, man!
I don't know how many people were screaming at the telly at that bit. James Haskell made a brilliant break.
I'm a huge Bontos fan.
Captain Bontos.
Even I was cheering for a Bontos score. I thought, it's all right, we'll score more afterwards, just let Bontos score.
The Archbishop of Banterbury had the chance to cap off what was a great performance with a brilliant try. As Phil mentioned in the little shouted at the telly, he runs so upright, and he does every time he runs into contact, he's so upright.
I don't think this is a problem if you're as strong as him.
No, it is because he's not making as many yards as he should be. He runs like there's no defender there. He just continues running exactly the same line. He doesn't drop his shoulder or step.
This, okay.
No, what do you think is going to happen if Sean O'Brien is the guy in his channel that he's running at?
No, he's not.
Sean O'Brien's going to stand him up, choke tackle him, and get the ball.
In rugby league, they run upright. Okay, running upright allows you to create weak shoulders and all the rest of it.
Isn't it a bit different when you're 2 yards from the try line?
Yeah, but I tell you what, he does score that. I mean, it doesn't matter if his shoulder is down or up, he's going to run into a post. That is just that.
We had a message on Twitter actually saying James Haskell is going to release the Captain Bontos new high-intensity post-smashing training regime.
Yeah, I'm surprised the post was still standing after he ran into it.
Exactly.
Adrian Lee said Dave Ewers would have knocked those posts over and scored.
Yes, he would.
James Haskell, his beard looked dyed. I thought he dyed his beard.
You do what he wants.
Next time, he was perfectly manicured. It was all so dark and lovely. He's an incredible specimen.
Just a thought for England, right? If they went out with that same team, but with everyone fit, but they picked that same team. Imagine if, when Wales are flagging, 60 minutes in, they look to their bench and they bring off Manu, they bring off Stefan, and they bring on someone.
Courtney
like,
Laws.
Oh,
and
my word.
Dave Wilson.
Ben Morgan. If
Ben Morgan.
Ben Morgan. God.
Dave Ewers. I mean, there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like I said last week, Lancaster might have stumbled into his best 15 because he doesn't really know them. And if he keeps them now, it just shows that opportunity is almost as important as talent.
Some other messages that we got in from Twitter. It's at Rugby Podcast, by the way. And thank you very much for, if you've added us this week or you've listened to the podcast for the first time or you're a long-time listener, very much appreciate you being on board. Steve Parrott said, have you seen the crowds for the LV Cup this weekend, boys?
Maybe you need to
reassess your... And he describes it as a sniffy position about the LV Cup. Well, yeah, we're not the biggest fans of the LV Cup, to be honest. I think it's great as a means of bringing young players through. It's not my favourite competition to watch.
I know. Why don't we watch it next year instead? Because we're busy this year.
Oh, there isn't one next year.
Oh, shame.
We watch so much rugby that we cannot possibly watch everything.
Well, but, do you know what? This is not a backhanded compliment in any way, but it is sometimes nice to watch the backups.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're really into a team.
Yeah, definitely.
I enjoyed the Bath Harlequins game because I got to see the whole Bath, you know, the whole depth of the Bath squad. And, you know, similar with Harlequins, although I do think Harlequins played a bit of a strong team.
Chris Beard on Twitter said he's just spent the whole day, this was on Saturday, he just spent the whole day walking around the house shouting, "Banners!" His kids and wife are American and are totally confused by him. So, yeah, and then he called us bar stewards for that. Yeah, it's on last week's podcast. JB, every time Matt Banahan gets the ball, and we now do it as well, shout, "Banners!"
Banners!
And the same with Nick Abendon and Benders.
Well,
and all the way through the England match, Bontos!
Yeah,
Bontos. For James Haskell.
Pity Sippers didn't get on. He would have had a few shouts.
He'd have had a couple of Sippers.
Benders looking for an England recall, according to Phil.
According to the rugby paper this week, Nick Abendon. Yeah. And he's mentioned that in his contract he would be available for all of the England training camps in the same manner that Jonathan Davis is.
Now, I like England players playing abroad and bringing that experience back.
I was thinking about this. A lot of players have been abroad to get experience. Haskell.
Yeah.
Of course, Martin Johnson played for the Junior All Blacks.
Tom Wood.
Tom Wood as well, yeah.
He spent some time in New Zealand.
Mm. So it's very important.
So maybe instead of an LV Cup, a sabbatical.
Yeah.
A sabbatical somewhere else in the world. Like a lot of football teams. I think Chelsea have, that they have a team in Belgium or something that they have a partnership with. They send their young players off to play there.
You won't appreciate this, Tim. The reason they have one in Belgium is because the immigration laws are very lax. So you can literally get 200 young Africans in. You can see which ones are good. Get them a visa and then bring them over to Chelsea and the rest of them go back home. That's why they do it.
Ah, right.
Interesting.
But maybe in a less questionably moral way, you could do that with rugby players as well. I think there's a young second row who's captain of the Chiefs. I want to say the Chiefs.
Really?
Matt Simons, he's called. Big Lock. And he was playing like low local rugby. And then he went over to New Zealand. He's now playing in New Zealand. I think he's been chosen as captain of the Chiefs for the Super Rugby season coming up.
Crikey.
And he's attracting the interest of London Irish and some other Premiership clubs.
Hang on.
He's about 23 years
captain
old.
Captain of the Chiefs or Waikato in the NPC?
Maybe it's Waikato, but he's in the Chiefs team.
Just looking him up. Started out in Saracens youth system.
How did he escape?
Playing for the Chiefs at the moment.
Let's have a little interlude. Ireland fans, Scotland fans, France and Italian fans, we are going to be talking about your side very shortly. We're also going to be talking about our fantasy rugby league, when are we having the cut-off for this, boys?
I just say let the boys play.
Here's the thing. There's £250 worth of Canterbury Stash on the line. Our good friends at Canterbury.
Only Canterbury Stash or exceptionally well-made and stylish Canterbury Stash?
Superbly made, perfect for rugby. All the leisure wear is perfect to wear in the rugby club after a game or during a match.
I have not tweeted my pictures of my new Canterbury Stash yet, but when I wear it, I look just like Jeff Parling. Body-wise.
Would you say you're hashtag committed to the game?
Oh, I'm so committed to the game.
What do you think of my current Canterbury Stash, Jay?
It's nice. It's not a good cut for you.
It's a little bit big.
It's a little bit big, isn't it?
It's actually my shirt.
It was Tim's shirt that handed me down.
Sure, it wasn't Tim's brother's shirt.
That's Phil wearing an England shirt to the podcast today.
It's very nice.
So anyway, £250 of Canterbury Stash could be yours. You can have your pick of all the wonderful goods that they have to offer for winning Egg Chasers Fantasy Rugby League. This is running on the ESPN Six Nations Fantasy Rugby site, and our unique PIN code for our league is 81262. 81262.
Let me know.
Have you got the little...
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Little soundbite.
Come and challenge like-minded rugby fans and join the Egg Chasers Private Fantasy Rugby League for the Six Nations Championship. You could even win some prizes. It's the ESPN Fantasy Rugby League. We've got a private code. Come and join our league. Just type in 81262. That private league code is
81262.
81262. One more time.
Terminal 81262.
I feel like I slightly need to explain. If this is the first podcast you've listened to, you're thinking, what the hell are these boys on? It's because we were reminiscing when we were saying the league code a couple of weeks ago about this advert from the 90s. And JB and Phil were like, wouldn't it be amazing if our league code could be done in that style?
And then boom, there it was.
Then it happened. join our league. We'll have to have a cut-off, though, because it wouldn't be fair if someone joined really late and jumped in at the top. So should we say
agree.
After...
By the close of game week two, so game week two closes, I think it's 2:30 on Saturday, this coming Saturday. So
our cut-off.
I will add everyone who has applied to the league then, and no one else will get in. I'll just reject you.
And we're getting on for 600 people in our league so far.
Yeah, coming up for 600 now.
So thank you very much for that. But I have got a Six Nations trivia question to share with you before we get to the other games which have been going on.
Grab me my pen.
And we've also got to pick our team changes for the week.
Oh, yes, for the fantasy rugby. Yes, we'll do that.
Okay.
And, of course, we've just mentioned it briefly, Super Rugby season starts this weekend as well.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we can spend every waking minute and day and night watching rugby. Okay, right, trivia question for you, Six Nations related. For each of the Six Nations sides, which player has the most Six Nations appearances? This is all-time Six Nations appearances. For each of the nations.
Is that from their current playing squad?
No. from that nation.
Okay.
So the most Six Nations appearance for Wales, Scotland.
So Wales's most Six Nations capped player, Ireland's most Six Nations capped player, England, Scotland, Italy, France. Some easier than others. It's pretty challenging, this one.
Yeah, it
sounds
is.
It.
Two of them retired more than 10 years ago.
Oh, brilliant.
Wow. Right, so it does include Five Nations then.
Yeah, it's pretty tough, I'll admit, but let's make it quite a quick one then. Just go with your gut.
Okay.
So Ireland, for example, I bet you both think
of...
Yeah,
we know.
Yeah.
Got him.
So why don't you just say it?
O'Driscoll.
Bod. I've got Rendon.
Bod, you're both correct.
Timmy Ding.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to find it. Hey, there you go.
I think I've got all six.
How many times have you said that on these questions?
What nation do you want to go with next, Phil?
So we've got Ireland. Let's go for Scotland.
Scotland, who have you got for Scotland?
I'm going to say Patterson.
I've got Chris Patterson as well.
Yes! Correct!
Well done!
Good work.
He's got 53 caps. Brian O'Driscoll, by the way, the most caps in any Six Nations player was 65. So you've got Scotland, you've got Ireland, two from two.
Wales?
Wales. Gethin Jenkins.
I've got Gareth Thomas.
Oh.
Martin Williams.
Oh.
Mr. 99 caps.
Yeah, but good effort though. 51 caps for him.
England?
England.
Jason Leonard.
That's what I've got down as well.
Yes!
Good work.
Three from four. That's good going. So we've got Italy and France, the two Gallic nations.
I've definitely not got France, but Italy, I've got Parise.
Parise as well.
Bergamasco. No. It's not Parise. It's not Bergamasco.
Bortolami.
It's not Bortolami either.
Chitterone, what his name is?
Cittadini.
Giraldini.
No, but he is in the current squad.
Christian Stoica.
No. It was Martin Castrogiovanni.
Oh. 53.
Okay, France.
So just France.
I was going to go with Abdel Benazi, but then I thought, no, Fabien Palus.
I've gone Serge Betson, and I know it's wrong.
Yeah, it's tough. It was it was Philippe Sellard, who was an amazing outside centre.
So both got three from six.
I'll tell you what, the way we'll do a tiebreaker on this one is who can pick another player that hasn't been named already, are the highest cap for their nation, who can get the highest on the list.
Is the question... So the people... Guess what the question is?
Yeah. No, sorry. Let me be clear.
Yeah. Please do.
Pick another player of any nationality that isn't one of the six that we've talked about as being the highest for their country. Pick any player from any nationality and who can get them highest on the list.
From any nationality of overall caps?
Overall Six Nations caps.
I'll go for Paul O'Connell.
Oh, damn you. I will go then with Dai Young.
Really?
That's a terrible, terrible guess.
Yeah, you lose quite comfortably on that one.
I don't know why I went with that.
Yeah, well done, Phil.
Yes!
We have a winner! That was quite a hard one, that. Yeah. I'm quite impressed. You got four out of six. That was good going.
Was it three out of six?
Three out of six. Well, whatever.
Three out of six. Anyway.
You did well.
Not bad.
You did well. So, Irish... We're 1-2 on that list, by the way. In fact, they're 1-4 in the list of Six Nations appearances.
Ronan O'Gara?
Yeah, Brian O'Driscoll 1, Ronan O'Gara 2, Mike Gibson at 3, who was played in the 60s and 70s, and John Hayes.
Oh, God.
Was the other
O'Connell's
one.
Not in the...
John Hayes!
Yeah.
John Hayes, yeah.
Oof.
We were saying off the podcast that Ireland have basically, for the last 15 years, only had two tight-head props. They had John Hayes for all those years, and then Mike Ross since then.
Who was the guy who came to Sale?
Tony Buckley.
Tony Buckley, yeah. Very much from the school of John Hayes propping, actually.
Leaning.
Yeah.
Good leaner.
Good lean.
Well, we've just talked about some Irishmen. Let's talk about the Irishmen that went to Rome.
Yes.
They did a job. Did what they needed to do.
They did.
Joe Schmidt said he's happy with the... Well, he's happy with the result.
Any win is a win. Two points in the Six Nations.
I didn't really see this. I saw the spectacular try from the seven. He was replacing... Sean O'Brien, who's yet injured again.
Which, yeah.
I know. Mm. That was probably... Those two things that you've just mentioned there were probably the two biggest things that happened. Sean O'Brien getting injured in the warm-up and Tommy O'Donnell scoring a very nice 40-50 metre try.
I don't know how Ireland do it. They just go to a local park somewhere and pick up a brand new back rail, and they're awesome. I mean, they're fully fit. Their back rail options are mega. I mean, they must be
the best. Heaslett wasn't involved.
Chris Henry and Sean
Chris
O'Brien.
Chris Henry and Sean O'Brien.
Two starting
sevens.
That's
the starting back row, basically. Yeah. Right there.
Peter Omani.
Peter Omani
was fit and playing pretty well.
You know, there's everyone fit. They are frightening. I mean,
Stephen Ferris as well.
Yes. Big Steve.
Poor Stephen Ferris. It was a bit boring, wasn't it? It was just lots of set pieces, not much continuity, not much flow to the game. Keatley kicked efficiently, if not spectacularly.
In some ways, they're quite similar to England in terms of they've got a lot of depth, but not much top-end quality. And I say that, I mean, obviously Sexton's great, but after Sexton, you've got two guys who are like what a 2 and 2A. And they're not really sort. They've got three options for outside centre. They're kind of stuck with Payne, and he's good, but is he great? Probably not. You know, they've got. It's kind of hard to tell where you know.
Well, it's early. It's early days for them, isn't it?
Yeah, Rome's a tough place to go. The Italian
is it? When you say it's a tough place, how many teams have lost there?
Ireland and France have both lost there in the last couple of years.
Have Ireland ever lost?
Lost in Rome 2 years ago.
So it's a semi-hard place to go.
They've got a good pack. They'll keep it tight, which is what they did. But ultimately, they were forced to make far more tackles and just tired. Ireland tired them out. And so the two tries late in the second half won the game.
Very nice. Shall we talk about France then?
More interesting game.
Yes,
even if the scoreline doesn't suggest it was. Expansive rugby. But neither team quite had that final product. They both either dropped the ball or got turned over when they were 5 metres from the yard, 5 yards from the line.
Yeah, the France game was awesome in some ways because it was stereotypical French rugby. Well, no, not French rugby. What's his name, the coach? My word.
Philippe Saint-André.
Okay, who has a marvellous track record of assembling some of the most talented teams the world has ever seen. And by the way, you can even include Sale.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Sale had a team of Hodgson, this is just in the backs, Hodgson, Lamont, the good one, McAllister.
Robinson.
Jason Robinson.
Yeah, wow. And
Quaito,
Hanley. I mean, these were serious, serious teams. And yet somehow they went and played the most boring rugby. And same with Toulon. And this was just one of his classic games. Can I just say, Teddy Thomas is my type of player. Electric going forward, complete liability going backwards.
Clueless
going backwards, yeah. Let's just have a quick talk then. Some French music that I think is appropriate. Let's talk about the French stash.
Oh, yes.
Allez le Rouge.
I love that kit.
They wore red. They've only worn it a couple of times in their history.
Now, this is a weird one for me about this red kit. No, about the French kit in general. There is not one single French flag on the French kit, yet there is a Scottish flag. So, if you're watching from America and you've never seen this before, it's like Scotland A versus Scotland B. I mean, what's going on here?
That is slightly confusing, because they've got the cockerel on the left breast, and then the Scottish flag right in the centre, and then Adidas on the right.
Exactly.
So it's to be like the Scotland chickens?
The Scotland cocks?
Is that who's playing?
So, this, I think, came from Bath, didn't it? Where if you played international, you got the little thing.
Yeah,
on
Bath were the first ones to do it.
I love that.
I love that as well.
Yeah, me too.
But you can't really put a French flag on there because we know you're playing for France. So instead, they've gone with the opposition flag, which is moronic, to put it mildly.
Oh, I love that kit, though.
It's a nice kit, but shall we get rid of the?
I think they're only that's going to be their change kit for the forthcoming season, maybe the World Cup as well. But they're only wearing that as a bit of a PR thing. They weren't.
Well, Scotland do play in blue, to be fair.
No, I know, but ordinarily it would be Scotland that would change.
No, it's home team that changes.
Is it?
Yeah, in rugby it's home team.
Ah.
Right, so PR for kits is a good point, because if you remember, Scotland played Scotland played the All Blacks, and they've got in their contract they've got to wear the change kit. So Scotland's change kit, they went from blue to, like, grey and black, and then the All Blacks went from black to black and grey.
Yeah.
It was the most confusing game you've ever seen.
I remember that.
Yeah, I do. Really worrying for me is the fact that Scotland look really good and their backs look exciting. And if you look at the England-Wales game, I said it multiple times during the game, don't try and bludgeon your way through Wales. You'll probably not have much luck. But if you do have a Jonathan Joseph type who is squirmy, you know, you'll get an awful lot more
success. Well, it was George North, like, punch-drunk George North trying to tackle Jonathan Joseph for that
try. Anthony Watson looked dangerous all game. Mm. And I just worry if Scotland come up and the backs are fizzing, led by Finn Russell, who I really am starting to rate now.
Yeah. Looking at Scotland and looking at England's back lines, I think it was encouraging that they looked two of the most dangerous back lines on show in the first weekend of matches. And they had some smaller, more squirmy players. And with all the talk about players getting massive and stuff, and you look at guys like Robbie Henshaw, he's absolutely enormous for Ireland. I just think it's nice to see
Finn Russell's tiny, isn't he?
I think it's nice to see some of the smaller guys actually doing...
Yeah,
doing
agreed.
Some good stuff.
And Finn Russell is smaller, but his tackling was really good. Put a few good, like, low tackles on Bastereau when he was starting to motor.
Well, let's just put this game in the context of playing Wales, which is, I'm really worried. Next weekend, I'm going up to watch the Wales-Scotland game. So if there's any egg chasers up there want to catch us for a pint, me and Phil are there. I think Scotland might turn Wales over. I think they've kind of got the ingredients, which we don't like playing against, which is a very, very slippery back line. And when we play France, God, that's going to be boring. I mean, that really is going to be a snooze fest.
It depends what tactics are played by Wales, I think. If they try and just hoist it high and run under the ball...
It's going to be like a hammer attacking an anvil. That's what it's going to look like.
Yeah, it could be boring. I think the game next week will be really, really good. I'm really excited that we're going up to it.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful.
Especially because...
Is that a stag do as well?
No,
it's just an excursion.
Well, it's not even an egg chaser trip. It's
a friend of ours got some tickets through his rugby club and offered us a couple. So, we're going up on the Saturday morning.
We'll be donning jackets and club ties, obviously, for the game. Standard procedure.
We need to get some egg chasers club ties, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Oh, yes, we do. That will be on the Sunday as well. So our podcast will be coming out one day later than normal.
Mm. Yes.
Worth pointing out because I imagine you two will be What are you having Monday off work?
Yes.
I must be. I was going to say. How are you going to cope otherwise?
Didn't even have Monday off work when I went to Chicago. But yeah, this is going to be a rather large one, I suspect. And a Sunday game too.
See, I see Wales winning. I don't think there's any panic yet. They've been here before, not least last year when they started badly and then came through strongly.
Lost to Ireland in the opening fixture last season.
Although England claiming an away victory when they have three home games as well, that's massive.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed.
Well, I still think Ireland are the nailed-on favourites.
Well, they play England at home and France at home.
Ooh.
So that makes it a lot easier for Ireland. England should be able to beat Italy and Scotland at home. France at home is a kind of a lottery. Just no idea what's going to happen. But then going away to Ireland I think it's just too difficult.
Mm. And this Scotland team isn't the same Scotland team which was around last year. They just look so much more focused. And they've got some talent. It worries me.
Hogg playing really well. Matt Bennett
Hogg
playing...
Hogg looked really good.
Hogg looked... Because I've not actually seen much of Hogg this season.
Did you see that little flick through his legs pass that he did?
Yeah.
That was an awesome bit of skill.
But really, really quick. And just attacking the line and like wanting to play running rugby, which is so good to see.
Mm. Yeah, this worries me. I think they've got the right ingredients to give the Welsh a little bit of a rude awakening.
Yeah, the Millennium Stadium's going to turn into a full-time nightclub this weekend whilst everything's going on up in Murrayfield.
Anyone who's been to Cardiff will know it's a full-on nightclub anyway.
The whole city.
The city, right, mistakes itself for a world capital. It's not. It's just the only city in Wales. and everything in Cardiff is set up like a huge warehouse. So after games, you can go and crowd into the walkabout or whatever it may be.
And drink Blue WKD to your heart's content.
Exactly. That's all it is anyway.
Just sounds like impromptu raves that will be going on. Bez from the Happy Mondays will be going there with some maracas.
Don't talk to me.
Free pills.
Don't talk to me about...
There we go. Back in the Millennium Stadium. Warren Gatland's got his shirt off now. Arms in the air. George North still looks absolutely smashed and out of it. Doesn't know what's going on. He still hasn't touched a drop.
Wow.
Anyway, so yeah, the Millennium Stadium would just be a nightclub. It's up in Edinburgh. I see Wales winning that one. No panic, they'll win. Because I think the reason Scotland lost, the reason Wales lost, is they just kind of got bludgeoned up front.
Yes, and this is exactly the same as we saw with Glasgow versus Bath a few weeks ago, when Glasgow played the best rugby, but ultimately the Bath pack was just too big, too strong, gave them enough field position, enough opportunities to win the game.
Yep.
And that'll probably happen with Wales against Scotland again.
Oh, I think so. They're not going to have Samson Lee, so who will their tight head be?
Aaron Jarvis was on the bench, wasn't he?
He was.
Wouldn't you want Adam Jones in your squad? I don't understand.
I think something's happened here. I really do. I think there's been a falling out. I mean, obviously, you know, I didn't take a genius to work it out, but something's gone on.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he got the call, would he actually come? Or would he just say, no, too difficult, family and all that?
Adam Jones's quote on that one was, if there were no tight heads left in Wales, of course I would play, but otherwise, no, I'm done.
But there are tight heads left in Wales. So
you've played a bit of tight head, haven't you?
I have dabbled in the dark arts, as they call it.
So when JB gets his call, we'll know Adam Jones is nearly getting a call up.
Yeah, just one rung above the ladder.
So are we all going for a Wales win there in Edinburgh, or are you thinking that Scotland are going to win, Jay?
I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, if Friday was anything to go by with, which of course it is, it's the only thing to go by, and looking at how Scotland played against France, I think Scotland have got what it takes. So, weirdly, I'm going to be picking Scotland to win two games in a row, even though they've just lost one.
Well, Scotland also obviously lose their starting tight head, because it's on a Sunday.
Ewan Murray.
Oh, yeah. God knows how he started, but yeah, he did start.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, it's not the biggest loss.
No.
Ireland host France, the late kickoff on Saturday evening.
Wonder what he'll be doing on Sunday.
Just in a room praying.
Yeah.
24 hours solid.
No, he's going down to the Millennium Stadium. Tops off for you and Murray. Ireland v France.
This is interesting. This is really, really interesting.
I don't know.
Sean O'Brien, will he be fit?
Right. This Probably Sean O'Brien not. Business has to stop. We've not seen him for years, it feels like.
He's played one game in 18 months.
I don't think we talk about Sean O'Brien again in the same way that we tried not to talk about Sam Burgess until he actually plays.
Proposition OB.
Yes. SOB.
No, I think he needs a recuperating trip up a mountain on horseback and go and pitch a tent, do a bit of fly fishing while he recovers his hamstring.
Actually, we all talk about top class internationals. What did Sam Burgess do this weekend? Do we have a Burgess update?
They played in the LV Cup. He played centre with Banahan. How about that?
Banners!
Wow,
Gatland must have been salivating.
About that for a massive centre pairing?
But they got beat.
Did they?
Yes.
13-10 at home to Ospreys.
Ew.
Yeah, I know.
He
scored 2-1, but didn't get any conversions. I couldn't tell you. I can find it
The killer bees.
So the teams that qualified from the LV Cup, I don't think there was a single Welsh team that got through.
What a surprise.
Gloucester finished top of their pool. Northampton finished top of their pool. Leicester finished top of their pool. And Exeter finished top of their pool.
What a miserable competition. So there'll be an English winner in the LV Cup. Wonderful news for all.
Anyway.
Yes.
Back to Ireland, France.
Go on.
How is this going to go? Like, France have got a monstrous pack up front.
They
exploited the fact that Scotland gave away too many penalties and Camille Lopez kicked very well. But they didn't look like they were particularly fluid or free-flowing or played any great rugby. And Ireland, well, basically since Joe Schmidt took charge, they've won virtually every single game they've played.
I think Ireland will win this. I don't think they'll win it comfortably because I think there's the old cliche, look how talented the French are.
I'm going to have to interrupt you here. I'm going to have to interrupt you because as we're recording the podcast... Oh, no, I need to turn off the music from the Millennium Stadium.
International rower.
There's some live rugby. Look at that.
Oh, Wales-England, the women's rugby.
Wales-England, the women's Six Nations rugby. And there's it looks like the teams are having to hike out half a mile from the ground. Where is that?
Oh, Rachel Taylor. North Walian. Captain of Wales.
It's the longest walk to a ground I've ever seen.
Where are they playing?
That looks like somewhere Welsh. It just looks like a Welsh rugby club.
Oh, is it Swansea? It's St Helens. I tell you what, magnificent game last night at the home of RGC, Park Arias. The Welsh under-20s beat the England under-20s, which we've never done before.
Yeah, first time ever.
Fact.
Wow.
21-15, despite incredible English pressure for the last 15 minutes. No doubt. Couldn't get over the line.
Yeah, no doubt they'll become seniors and Gatland will coach that out of them. But, they look very good.
I think Ireland will win at home, although that front five that the France have got is pretty... Much like England going away with a really big old front five and that dominated Wales, I think Ireland will struggle up front against France.
Yeah, but think about this. How do you coach against such artistry as Uge and the enigma of Teddy Thomas.
And Scott Spedding.
And Scott Spedding.
South African.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of South African and New Zealanders in that team.
They have, but, you know, Thomas, Uge and your man crush.
Yes. What's his name?
I don't remember names today. I feel horribly hungover. It can conjure magic from anything.
Fofana.
Yes. So, it's not...
But Ireland will have definitely Sexton back, we think. They could have Heaslip back. They could even have Kean Healy back.
Mm.
They probably won't have Sean O'Brien back.
Why would you bring... I don't think you bring Kean Healy back too soon. I don't think you bring
Sean
O'Brien.
He played 2 weeks ago against the Saxons.
He did, but still, I just don't think it's worth the risk yet. I think
Ireland victory, but not by a lot.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Agreed.
And then the final game, England against Italia.
Which is also the first game at 2:30
on
the Saturday.
Yeah, first game, 2:30 on Saturday. And the easiest one to call.
Should be, yes. I'd love to say Parise will win, but I don't think he will.
What a miserable existence. Yeah, I think England.
I think it should be comfortable. Hopefully they'll score a few tries, put that back line to good use, and hopefully be a good game. We arrive in Edinburgh at 1:30 on the Saturday. We've got an hour to get to where we need to be and watch that game at 2:30.
And then the next game. And then go out. And then watch the game. And then go out again.
So to our Scottish or Welsh podcast listeners, if you're up in Edinburgh, then bob us a tweet to @rugbypodcast and tell the boys where you are and maybe cross paths on Saturday and watch the game, have a few bevvies and whatnot. I will not be part of that.
Are you ever going to come on one of our Ed Chaser's rugby trips?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm going to just be sat at home. My full-time job for that day is just going to be moderating the tweets that JV will be sending.
I'll tell you what we do need to do next time all three of us get to a live rugby game is take on three listeners in a boat race. The three of us, any three listeners, and a faster team to do 3 pints.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Sounds tremendous.
That sounds like there's only one winner. But yes.
Yeah. We've got a slight advantage, I think.
Worth pointing out as well that the Aviva Premiership returns this coming weekend, Valentine's weekend and all that.
Does it?
Yes, there's Aviva Premiership rugby, there's Super 15 rugby. Do you want me to run you through the fixtures briefly?
Yes, please.
Friday, so there's a couple of games in the morning on Friday if you want a late start to work. Crusaders against Melbourne Rebels, 6:35 a.m. Friday. Brumbies against the Reds, 8:40, and there's the Lions against the Hurricanes. And on Saturday, you've got the Blues, Chiefs, Sharks, Cheetahs and Bulls, Stormers. So, largely speaking, they're keeping it within the nationality, nations. For the most part. Obviously, there's 15 teams, so you can't do that totally. In the Aviva Premiership, though, there's two games on Friday night. Leicester against Gloucester. Leicester, Sean of their England players, Gloucester as well. This is an interesting little window, and it's when teams like
Exeter.
Sale Sharks, Exeter, tend to do quite well.
Yeah.
Do we really want to be seeing the LNV Cup is for backups. A-team League is for backups. And I just kind of think, do we really want this for our first team rugby?
There's just not enough weekends in the rugby. There's not 22 free weekends if you take out the eight weekends the Six Nations squads are involved.
Well, you know what the answer is, right? You've been off the Autumn Internationals.
Potentially, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Have the global season that we've spoken about.
Global season,
before.
Yeah. You get rid of the LV Cup. In fact, part of me thinks you either need to go all in on the European Cup, like a kind of pan-European NFL-style conference system, which would be amazing, or you slim down the European Cup, because both those competitions are huge.
Yeah. But the finals are such a big draw.
I think what you say, the global season is the way to go. You can fit everything in then.
Either one or two finals, depending on the tiers. Whereas this way, we've got the two European finals, and then each of the leagues has its own finals, and it's too much of a money spinner.
Because the only thing messing us up, really, is the French and English, because their club system is so immense.
If we flipped... I'd love to see summer rugby. There's nothing worse as a supporter watching live rugby than being in Baltic, horrible conditions in January.
No.
When it's
That is perfect.
Hail, rain, I hate it.
Couldn't be any better.
I hate it.
Friday night game, watching several scrums. There was a game last year, Sale versus Bath, and the scrum took 10 minutes, and I've never been so excited. It was epic.
You were watching that on TV, not stood in minus two degree conditions.
I was the match announcer at that game, and I did not enjoy standing outside in that. No, I think after the World Cup, it would have been a great opportunity to have said, right, World Cup's happening in September, then there's going to be 3 months till the start of the new season, and do the global season where it runs like rugby league, February to October, and then you can have all your international matches at the end, before you get back into it again.
Yeah, and it's a level playing field for the international matches, because at the moment you either got the end of the season or start of the season, and you're not comparing like with like all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's not going to happen. So that's a pipe
dream. It might do if Bruce Craig gets his way, and he gets his way with everything.
Mm. Leicester versus Gloucester then. It's really hard to call without England players. I'm going to go for a Leicester home victory.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll go with that as well.
Northampton against Irish. Northampton have lost a few players.
So have Irish
with their Scottish contingent.
Yeah, Blair Cowan played really well.
Important players, by the way. I'm going to go
Northampton at home. On Saturday, you've got Exeter against Newcastle. The sole game on Saturday, by the way.
Is it right?
Which is just kind of sandwiched, so you get to see most of the first half before Ireland-France starts.
Yeah.
I think I'll go with... Is it Newcastle at home?
No, it's at Exeter. Newcastle had a Newcastle had a good win away at London Irish in the LV Cup.
Yeah,
they're playing a lot better.
This isn't the LV Cup, and this isn't London Irish.
Exeter to win.
Yeah, I will go with that as well.
And then on Sunday, the remaining fixtures in the Aviva Premiership. Saracens against Bath. A massive fixture.
See, this shouldn't be played this week.
I can understand that, but it's a good test. It's a good test of the squad depth for both.
Wigglesworth, Farrell, Cruz, yeah.
Do you want to hear my solution? I've just thought of this now. It's brilliant.
I can't think of any more than that.
Hamilton,
but he's not really starting anyway.
Vinopoulos.
Barrett's out. Bath, I'm just thinking they've got Paul James out. Dave Atwood.
Wilson out.
Wilson is out injured. Jonathan Joseph. Anthony Watson, George Ford. Ooh, dear.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Is this really a game you want to see now?
We get to see Spurgeon. We get to see Sam Burgess play.
You see him anyway.
I'm going to go with Saracens at home.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Agreed.
Wasps against Quins. No Bantos! Running into posts, doing his pre-match post-hitting training drill.
No Bantos beating Rob Shaw. Comfortably like he did last time. I feel like I've seen this game a few weeks ago, so I don't care about it.
No Marler.
No Mike Brown.
No Mike Brown.
No Nick Easter.
Yeah.
But they will have Danny Kerr.
They will have Danny Kerr.
It's interesting.
I'll go with Wasps.
I'll go with Wasps at home as well.
And we go to the fence for London Welsh against Sale.
How many players is London Welsh losing to internationals?
I'm sorry, that's a serious question.
to a few to depression, probably.
Ollie Barkley playing international?
Not this season.
Tim Mulnar?
Probably not this season.
Doesn't it just seem... It shows how ridiculous the media spin is now. At the start of the season, where they had, you know, the classic, the Times have the breakfast round table of the directors of rugby saying, oh, well, do you really want to play against Piri Whippu, Ollie Barkley,
Tom May
and Molnar? Look at that creativity. What?
Yes, please, can I play
yes,
against
okay,
them?
Yes, okay,
every week, please.
Can Crawls and Park play against them, please?
we can talk about things that people have said in the past. This was you last week, JB.
So I don't think Brown's been as consistent as everyone says. Brilliant. He has horror after horror.
Mike Brown hasn't been very good. Mike Brown has horror after horror.
I agree. And
I agree with myself.
And not only that, if you look at the two fullbacks on Friday, Halfpenny was far better. He was the only Welsh back to come out with a lot of credit.
His kicking was very good. His position was good. Under the high ball, he was very good. But you could say all that about Mike Brown.
Mike Brown was superb. Positioning was excellent. His kicking out of hand was brilliant. There was even the one that went straight into touch that was called outside the 22, and he was actually inside the 22, and he got it perfect. He did the little grubber for Anthony Watson's try.
He
looked a threat in attack.
He is not the player Lee Hop any. The sooner England realise this, the better.
And when we talk about London Welsh, let's just remember where we were all predicting them to finish this season. We all thought they'd avoid the drop.
Yes, we did.
Yes,
embarrassingly.
Yeah, embarrassing.
Why? Who did we say we'd go down?
Newcastle.
Oh, God, that is embarrassing.
I know.
So, how do we come to that conclusion?
Can you cut that bit out, please, Tim?
I'm going to listen to some back podcasts, see if I actually said that. Maybe I was hoping Newcastle went down, but now I'm warming to them.
We need to pick our fantasy rugby team for the round of Six Nations. So we have as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we have a private Six Nations fantasy league. Come and join it, add your team to it, potentially win £250 of Canterbury stash. It's on the ESPN Rugby Fantasy site. We will tweet out a link at Rugby Podcast. Go and find it, and then add your team to our private Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast League, which has the league code 81262. There's nearly 600 teams that have done just that, and thank you very much for taking the trouble. Phil, you just picked out a few of the names of some of the teams, which were brilliant. They made us all chuckle when we were looking through some of the team names.
I wanted to pick up my top three, but I actually ended up picking my top four team names. So from the bottom...
You maverick.
Currently in 490th place.
He will just stick it to the man. There's no way Phil follows rules like that.
He lives on the edge, doesn't he?
I like rules, but
sometimes you have to break some rules,
yeah.
Don't you? You have to smash a few eggs to make an omelette, I guess.
Exactly. Okay, so 490th place, James Bridges with Nathan Budget All-Stars.
Oh, nice. Yes.
In 461st place, Callum Gillon with 50 Shades of Johnny Grey.
Ooh. Very good. Very topical. Very topical, like that.
Second place, 144th position, Owen Bainon with Taking the Parise.
Very
nice.
Good. Very
like
good.
That.
And my absolute favourite, in 150th place, Josh Rice with Good Vibrations.
Can I just, 50 Shades of Johnny Grey, okay? So we were playing this weekend in Cumbria. We played Penrith. And on the way back, we were...
Sixth straight league defeat, by the way.
Yeah, it was much best performance, though. So singing that. And on the way down, back from Cumbria, we were seeing who was available and who wasn't. And our young hooker, who's having a really good season, declared himself not available for next week. Do you know why?
Go on.
Taking his new girlfriend out to watch 50 Shades of Grey...
Saturday afternoon
before cocktails.
Oh my god. Are you joking?
Andrew Selby, you have been named and shamed.
Are you joking?
Nope, I'm deadly serious. Deadly serious.
Wow.
Oh my word.
What is the game coming to?
We started this podcast and I was poking fun and I was questioning the razzmatazz and the light show and DJ Spoonie being used at the Millennium Stadium. That's just taking the biscuit.
Pretty bad, isn't it?
That is worse than Yoann Ouzier's dive.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say to that. Like, presumably, he would have got an incredible amount of stick. I would have lied. If that was the truth, by the way, I would have lied.
Yeah, well, you'd say, yeah, I'm going to the gum clinic. Or anything.
Yeah.
And I think now it's out, he's owning it, which is exactly the way to go. Because the last thing you want to do is get rumbled. But yeah, he's going for cocktails and he's going for 50 Shades of Grey. Matinee showing.
I suppose it raises an important sort of general point with relationships and stuff, and that is that a lot of these Six Nations matches are falling on Valentine's Day this year.
Yep.
But, I mean, this isn't being overly, like, blokey or anything, but come on. Come on. There's room for a bit of balance. I understand if Saturday's an important day for your other half and you want to... You want to treat her right or whatever, but come on.
Treat her right. Come on. Or whatever. If Six Nations is on, make sure you watch it and get your priorities right. Because these games won't come around again. Not that exact game in that exact order, at least.
Oh, God. How many different showings will there be of 50 Shades of Grey, by the way?
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, it's been
and it's a home game.
Yeah, home game.
Ugh. Oh, that's unforgivable. Right, listen, thank you very much for listening this week. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. We'll be just talking about rugby, tweeting pictures of Samson Lee's tiny face and other such things as we have been doing over the last week. But yeah, enjoy the rugby. We'll be back here again. Like, just to remind you and give you the proper heads up, the podcast will be out on Monday evening, not Sunday night / Monday morning next week, because the boys, Phil and JB, are going to be soaking up the atmosphere and we'll be reporting back having been to Edinburgh to see Scotland v Wales. We're going to step back into the nightclub of the Millennium Stadium. Oh, George North is comatosed on the floor. He is unconscious. Look at him. He hasn't had a drop.
He has been dropped, though.
Oh, dearie me, dearie me. Right. Have a brilliant week, and thank you for listening at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and we'll see you next time. Nice one, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
Nice one, Phil.
Cheers. Hear me now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.